In the criminal justice system, judges have wide leeway to hand down sentences based on the eccentricities of the case. But anyone who's watched Law and Order knows that sometimes sentences reflect the eccentricities of the judges just as much. And a new study suggests that's exactly how it works in Boston federal court. A little background. In 1986, Congress passed mandatory sentencing rules for federal crimes. Possession of 50 grams of crack, for example, carried a mandatory sentence of 19 to 22 and a half years. But then in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court said that these rules should be treated more like guidelines and that judges had ultimate discretion. Now, the federal court for the District of Massachusetts is the only court in the nation to make certain sentencing documents public. So that's why it's the focus of a study in this week's Stanford Law Review by Ryan Scott, a professor at Indiana University's School of Law. And what Professor Scott found is that since 2005, some judges on Boston's federal bench have been consistently handing down more lenient sentences, while others have not. And Professor Scott is on the phone with me now from Indiana. Hi, Professor Scott.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Professor, when we say that judges have been handing down pretty consistently more lenient sentences, how much more lenient are we talking about?
Well, today in the court in the District of Massachusetts, among the judges in Boston, the court's three most lenient judges, on average, are imposing sentences of about 25 and a half months or less, while the two most severe judges on the court are imposing sentences much higher, about 51 months or more. So that's a difference of more than 2 years in prison on average, depending on which of those groups of judges is assigned to the case.
So certain defendants could end up with a twice as much prison time depending on which judge they land in front of.
It's true. Now, of course, the particular offense and other offender characteristics are much stronger predictors of your sentence than which judge draws the case. But if you look at enough cases over time, my study looks at over 2,000 sentences over a six-year period, and the patterns between judges are pretty clear. So in a particular case, the offender and the offense matters a lot more. At the margins, the judge that you draw does have real consequences for criminal offenders.
Now, you just said that the patterns are pretty clear, although the public doesn't know which judges are associated with which patterns, because you actually declined to match the sentencing records with the judges' names, even though I believe in the information you had the judges' names. So we don't know who are the tough judges and who are the lenient judges. Why not connect those dots and make those names public?
It's true. Well, it's because I want to encourage more judges to make available the documents that the judges in Massachusetts have. It's quite generous of the judges in Massachusetts to reveal the identity of the judge in connection with these cases. The documents that they make public are kept secret by the rest of the federal judiciary, I think, because the federal courts are reluctant to expose their decisions to the kind of scrutiny that studies like this make available. But to their credit, judges in Boston, because of a commitment to transparency in sentencing decisions, have made available these documents that allow me to link up records and conduct a study like this. This is the first study of its kind in over 10 years that looks at how individual judges in the same courtroom are imposing sentences to one another. So this really is a rare glimpse at how judges in a particular court are handing down sentences relative to one another.
Are you saying that individual judges can decide whether to release their paperwork, or is it a court system decision and they just release everything on all judges?
In this case, the court made the decision as a whole. So everybody in the District of Massachusetts decided to release these statements of reasons to the public. But other courts could make that same decision. They've followed the policy of the Federal Judicial Center by keeping them non-public.
So in the study you've done, we don't have actual names matched to sentences. But we do know that on the Boston federal bench, we have one Nixon appointee, one Carter, three Reagan, one Bush senior, and four Clinton appointees. Now, I imagine that some people might assume that the Democratic appointees are the more lenient judges and the more stringent judges were nominated by Republicans. Did you find that that is the case?
Actually, no. It wasn't very strongly correlated with the party of the president that nominated the judge. It's a pretty small sample size, so take that for what you will. We're talking about 10 judges in Boston. But no, I think that the trend has more to do with judges values about punishment and their views about particular kinds of cases and perhaps about criminal sentencing as a whole. Boston has a number of exceptional judges on sentencing issues, and I think that in a way it's a unique court in the number of big sentencing personalities that it has handing down sentences. And so that translates, I think, into some of the difference between judges that's been growing since the Booker decision in 2005.
Professor Scott, in your study, you don't weigh in as to whether or not you think it's good for judges to go below the sentencing guidelines. But do you have an opinion about whether this disparity in sentencing habits among Boston judges is a good or bad thing?
Oh, I think it's a bad thing. It's a troubling development, and this is just one study looking at one court. We'll see if it plays out in the rest of the nation. But it's troubling because it's offensive to notions of equality and consistency and equal treatment before the law, that the sentence that an offender receives depends on which judge happens to be assigned to the case. The reason Congress passed the Sentencing Reform Act in the first place was to try to minimize judge-to-judge disparity. Similarly situated defendants ought to receive similar sentences. And this suggests that in the big picture, over a long range of time, and as the guidelines have become advisory rather than mandatory, that differences between judges are really driving sentencing outcomes.
And
that's a troubling development.
Does this judge-to-judge disparity, as you call it, make an argument in your view that we should have strict mandatory sentencing guidelines so that all sentences are consistent?
That's one option, I suppose. Another, in the short term, I think, while we're still evaluating what's happening on the ground, I think it's, at a minimum, a call for judges to pay close attention to what their colleagues are doing in the same courtroom and to do their best to align their judgments with those of their colleagues. But yes, if this trend persists, I think it's something Congress could take a look at. Is it a good option? Does it make sense to give the guidelines more legal force by making them presumptive again?
Professor Scott, thanks for joining us on the phone from Indiana.
Thanks very much for having me.
Ryan Scott is a professor at Indiana University's School of Law. His study about sentencing disparities among judges on Boston's federal bench is published in this week's Stanford Law Review. Coming up, it was a strong year for Boston-themed books. Two knowledgeable local booksellers tell us which were best. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.